Hi, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to Evoke Therapy Program's broadcast. Tonight's topic is one of the more difficult topics because the answers that I have aren't perfect. I don't have answers that make co-parenting a successful experience for everybody. It's one of the most difficult questions that I actually get asked is when people ask me, what do I do if my co-parent is my youngest child, is undermining the experience? And I always say it is an experience of having one hand tied behind your back in parenting. And it's going to cause drag and you're going to be less effective and less successful. But tonight I'm going to present what co-parenting ideas, concepts, tools, principles that I think can be most helpful in giving you the most success. And I do believe in the long game. I do believe that over the long run, your child will experience you as the healthier one, the one that has better boundaries, the one that doesn't need to be taken care of, that doesn't need to be the friend or accepted like a peer. But that's a hard long game, especially when such important things are on the line, like their safety. So co-parenting it is tonight. The first thing that I always say when talking to parents about this, that if you need to do something legally, if you believe that the parent is dangerous enough, sabotaging enough, that a new custody agreement or some other measure can be taken legally, then you need to seek that out. And sometimes you can ask a lawyer what your rights are or what is the threshold where the law is going to become involved in it. And I think that just gives you the choice. And that's not something that I or other therapists can dictate. That's going to be judged by the courts. And so, for example, if your co-parent is supplying illegal substances or alcohol to your underage or your minor child, that's something that a court can become involved in. If they're exposing them to things that are unhealthy and unsafe at a significant level, the courts can become involved in that. And the reason that I start off with that is because that's something that's your right to seek out, your right to know. For the most part, I'm going to be talking about everything below that threshold. And I'm not going to be talking too much or really at all about co-parenting when both parents are equally yoked, when they're matched and unified for the most part in this process. And so I suspect that families that have that dynamic won't even tune into something like this broadcast because they're not challenged by it. Years ago, when I was younger, I thought about being on the same page with a greater degree of priority. And even in my own family, I think there can be some differences between the two of you. Now, if those differences become more fundamental, then it becomes a problem. If those differences set up one of you to be the bad cop, one of you to be the good cop pretty significantly, then that is something that can split the system and the child can take advantage of that vulnerability in the family. But it's okay to have some differences. It's okay to have some different boundaries, some different rules, some different ideas of consequences. Most important is that you're respectful of each other. Most important that individually that you own it, that you not seek out a dialogue with your child where it's about you being right and the other parent being wrong. You just talk about it from the place of self, from the place of this is what I feel comfortable with. And that's not too much different than most of the parent coaching that I do. You know, changing it from the paradigm of right and wrong to the paradigm of this is what I feel comfortable with in this situation. Really taking out of the dialogue this need to be right and make others wrong. That's a more fragile, tenuous foundation to stand on. And there's very few things, this is important, there's very few things that are more important than the contribution to our child's development than the healthy self in a parent. That is fundamentally, foundationally, the most important thing that you can work to develop. So the question becomes, when do you let go? When do you stop fighting the battle? For me, one of the triggers, one of the ways that I know that I'm in my codependent patterns is that I obsess over it. I go through dialogues. I develop my arguments, my points. I'm constantly distracted or obsessed by the wrongness of the other person. And so that, regardless of their participation, that obsession for me is an indication that I'm in my own sickness. I'm in my own illness, right? I'm going to more likely lose my center, not parent from a place of self and authenticity, but parent from a place of reactivity. That's for me. I talk about this idea of focusing on yourself. In Al-Anon, they talk about the idea of, you know, keeping your side of the street clean. And that when you're seeking out a compromise, try when you can to go more than halfway. You know, sometimes, and again, you get to decide this, so I'm not suggesting in any specific circumstance what to do. I don't think that that's appropriate for me to do, or any therapist for the most part, unless, again, it crosses the threshold of abuse, where the law would take action, is let them try it. Let consider the possibility of trying it their way, even if you think it's wrong, even if you think it's the less enlightened path. Sometimes people need their process. Of course, don't correct or talk to your children about the negative stuff said about you, right? Don't engage in that dialogue. Just be okay with your relationship with the child. If they come to you and tell it, do your very best to not need to be the good one, need to be the right one. And that takes, I think, a tremendous amount of courage and support and resourcefulness. Making sure you're talking to your own therapist or your sponsor and making sure that you're grounded in self. Again, in the long game, the child will recognize when a parent doesn't need to be taken care of. When a parent knows and shows up knowing that they're okay. Be safe for your kids. There are a few things that are more important than what I'm about to say on any topic broadcast. And that is that the research shows us, tells us, that children don't need several sources of resonance, of healthy attachment, to develop healthy attachment, to develop in a healthy way. The research tells us that even in the face of trauma, that having one stable person in your life that saw you, that showed up as a self, will mitigate that trauma, will make a difference in your life. And the research that I've done, that I've participated in, it's the one factor that we see change the causality of trauma, is the identification by the child that there was a person in my life growing up that was consistent, who saw me. And so again, in the long game, the most important part of it, that's all that matters. So be a safe person for your kids. And to be safe, you have to take care of you. It's important that they don't think, believe, experience that they need to take care of you. You know, be a part of the solution. I think for one of the things that I identify again as my trigger in co-parenting is if I find myself polarizing, compensating for the other person, right? Instead of parenting the child, I'm really just playing out co-parent dynamics in the process, trying to fix them. Don't blame, don't identify your child with the other parent. Don't blame them for your behavior. And I believe this. There's plenty of blame to go around when it comes to parenting. Even in situations where I think one parent is doing significantly better, there's plenty plenty of material for both children. It's nice to think about and imagine that the bulk of the child's problems come from the other parent. And even if that's true, that doesn't preclude that there's something that I can be doing better, something I can be doing to listen better, something I can be doing better to manage and take responsibility for my anxiety or my anger, my impatience. And making that my project, even if my co-parent is a train wreck, it makes a difference. And the child can sense that difference over time. Let therapists do the heavy lifting, especially in our program, you know, in treatment programs. Sometimes I'll get on the phone with co-parents that are at odds with each other, and I'll say to the parent at one point, let me do that. Let me confront or teach. Let me point that out. You pointing that out only hurts our efforts to try to find balance, find cohesion, find a kind of higher watermark for your co-parent. Like I said, decide the safety legal threshold and then think about good enough. Think about the fact that when we talk about parenting, we talk about good enough parenting. There's no normal family, right? Nobody grows up in a normal household. That illusion is in itself toxic. Our attachment to that illusion is a huge problem. So we start to think about things as good enough. And again, like I talk about in a lot of parenting topics, being right is poison. Being right is combat. It's warfare. It's argument. You know, parents have to be right. Children have to be right. The opposite of being right is being a person. It's like the story I tell of the father who came up to me after a parent meeting saying, give me some literature on the effects, negative effects of marijuana use. This was before marijuana was legal in any state. And I said, why do you need that? And he said, well, my young adult child is smoking pot and I want to show it to him. And I said, just tell him you're not comfortable with it. And he said, is that enough? The woman who came to me and said, you know, it took me 6 months to convince my child's therapist that my divorce was justified. And my response was, it wouldn't take you two sentences. I don't have an opinion on that. You get to decide that. But when we grow up in systems where you have to be right, but not just feel, have your experience, it creates this place where everybody's trying to compete. Everybody doesn't feel like they're enough. Everybody can't just set a boundary. They have to support that boundary with case studies and research and professional letters, right? So out of the context of being right into the idea, the sensibility of being a self. And that takes work. It takes a lot of work. It takes years of therapy, years of participation in 12-step groups like Al-Anon and Codependence Anonymous, because very few of us, close to none of us, grew up in homes where being a self was enough. We had to prove that we were entitled to the feeling, the thought, the idea, the boundary that we had. Focusing on the other's change. It is like the obsession comment. It's important that if the focus becomes on the other, right, you're going to lose balance. Like I said, there's plenty of material in all of our lives to work on. This idea of empowering children, you know, as they grow a little bit older, that to leave the relationship between them and your co-parent, right? Let them sink or swim. Again, if it crosses the threshold of safety and then legality, totally different. But short of that, consider stepping out of it. Consider saying, I'm sorry, I can't help you. Offer support for the child in the context of therapy, of a therapist for them, somebody else who doesn't have a dog in the fight, who doesn't have their own wounds and water under the bridge with this other person. Don't become the rescuer, the fixer, the mediator. I think this is very important, and this is deeper work. Separating your need and the child's need. I think that takes some work in therapy. I think that my wife and I were just having a discussion about this a week ago. I was dealing with stress that had nothing to do with her. And she said, I want to understand it. Can you talk about it? And it was at the end of the day. And I said, I don't need to talk about it. So if you're talking about what I need, I don't need to talk about it. If you needed me to talk about it, maybe I can talk about it. But I'm pretty drained and I'm pretty stressed and overwhelmed with it. And she paused and she said, I'm okay. I don't want to ask something of you where you're already taxed. And that was powerful, right? She recognized that it was her need maybe to fix, to deal with the anxiety of not knowing the details of it, of how she could help, her need to soothe, where I just needed to take some time and rest, maybe even go to bed, because it was the end of a long day, and my physical exhaustion was adding to the stress of the day. So in that example, identifying what her need and my need is. I've had parents talk about wanting the child to sort out, to talk about, to speak to the wounds created by the other parent. That may be more my need than theirs. Right now, they might need to protect themselves. Right now, they might need to keep their walls up a little bit because it's overwhelming. So getting clear about through your own work about what your need is, listening to your child, listening to your child's therapist, even if you think you know, and believe me, I know what it feels like to think I know. But taking a step back, gaining some clarity, understanding that I might have needs that blind me or eclipse my ability to see what my child needs. When I talk about co-parenting therapy, it's something I've participated in for myself, something obviously I've facilitated thousands of times. Focus on the shared goals, right? Try to take a step towards each other, even if you have very different styles, right? Think about polarized situations. One parent is all nurturing. One parent is all boundaries. One parent is laissez-faire and hands-off. One is hovering. On and on and on. When we get to the bottom, both believe that their approach is helpful for development. So let's just start with that. Even if you disagree, and again, what happens in co-parenting is we're really just fighting with the other parent. The child and the parenting decisions are the content of it, but we're angry and hurt about the way the other person shows up in the world, the way they showed up in the relationship with us. And the content, the actual battlefield that we're fighting on is about the child and the child's safety and well-being, but it really goes back to some of the wounds, some of the hurts, some of the ways that we were treated by the other person. So try to find some common ground and shared goals. Learn to listen. Again, when there's pain and wounds and trauma in the past, it makes it very difficult. Try to use a co-parenting therapist to help negotiate, help come to some kind of compromise, and consider, like I've said earlier, consider letting go. You know, it's almost a universal statement. Try your best not to talk about the child with the other parent. Notice I didn't say talk about or say anything negative about the other parent. I said try to not talk about the other parent with your child. You're not objective. You have your own history. You have your own relationships. It can be tempting. It can even be validating at times, especially when they're upset or frustrated by your co-parent. But because you have a dog in the fight, you're not completely safe. So listening, saying nothing, maybe even offering, I don't know that I'm the best person to talk about this. Happy to find a therapist or somebody where you can talk. I don't know. I don't know if I can provide you what you need because I have my own stuff. It's kind of like I talk about, or they talk about with grief work. One of the reasons why families struggle supporting each other with grief is because everybody's going through their own version of it. Allowing your child to replace the parent, right? That can be, it's subtle. I remember as an adult in my late 30s and 40s going to therapy with my mother. She was in town. And then sitting down, we'd been to therapy as teenager, when I was a teenager. And so I thought, this would be fun to revisit it. We had a lot of success when I was a teenager. And I had a session set up and I said, would you like to come? Just for old time's sake. It was around a holiday visit. And she said, sure, why not? And we got into it. And I said, you know, when I was younger and I kind of took the role of, you know, took care of you emotionally. And she said, what? What are you talking about? And I said, I thought we covered this when I was 16 and 17 years old. And she had obviously forgotten about it. And it was a tough thing for her to hear. But we do that. Single parents, divorced parents do that. They become our friend. They become somebody we lean on. That's what makes single parents more vulnerable than parenting systems where there are two parents co-parenting effectively. Is if I have a co-parent I can lean on, we lean on each other. We rely on each other. They become my source of support and feedback. But if I'm alone, then I need my child to be happy with me. I need my child to like it more. I need my child's attention and affection more. Right? It's natural. Alice Miller in the book, I think the most important book in child development, The Drama of the Gifted Child, says that we ask for things from our children and they're willing to give it to us at great costs. We ask for things that we should have but didn't receive from our parents. So it's nearly universal in our awareness of it, our willingness to admit that to ourselves, to open that up is really, really important. Depending upon them for the support, validation that you could be, ought to be receiving from the other parent. Granting them equal say in a democracy. There's this really fine balance between listening, hearing, validating, and knowing that the buck stops with you, that it's okay if they're unhappy, that it's okay if you make a choice. And I'm going to take it one step farther just to illustrate that you're selfish in your choice. That your choices are dictated by what you feel comfortable with and what you need, what you need in your home, what boundary you have in your life for self-care. That's okay. Using them to meet all of your needs obviously gets in the way of parenting. Divorce and marital conflict is not all of the problem, but it's some of it. And part of it is for the child to figure out over their lifetime and in their work. You don't get to decide how much of it is the issue. You can encourage the exploration of it. You can be willing to explore it with them, open to exploring it with them, but they get to decide. Allowing the therapist to do the teaching, like I said before, the heavy lifting of parent education instead of you taking it on is really important. You know, this idea, I started to talk about this at the outset. When I was younger, I overvalued united fronts. I'm not talking about covert, split systems, sabotage. I'm talking about both parents being on the same page. You can have differences. My wife and I have differences. There's no splitting going on. The children know that I have certain preferences and styles. And they know she doesn't. We're intact. We're a married couple. And they're not confused, upset, or anxious about it. And I'm willing to own my limitations and my boundary. And similarly, so is my wife. Most of the time, we are. It's okay. And sometimes that means that the lowest, you know, the threshold is going to be where one of us is willing to tolerate it. You know, decisions about curfews, movies they see, right? Things they say, language they use, things like that. If it's offensive to her, they don't use it when they're around us. If it's offensive to me, if I'm not comfortable with this movie, this curfew, then I'm not comfortable with it. And we kind of take the one with the lowest threshold and respect it. And not play the game of who's the bad cop and who's the good cop. But we're just two people, two selves. So united fronts can be important. The undermining, the backbiting, the sabotaging, the splitting, all of those, of course, can be harmful. The good cop, bad cop polarization, you know, those things can be harmful. But again, those things come from a place where people are needing, wanting to be good instead of being a self. But it's also okay to just own differences. This maybe should go without saying, but keep the divorce details to yourself. Even if the other person was a monster, keep it to yourself. Your co-parent, your child walks around in part with an identity. And that identity is partially about the other person. And so to speak ill of the other person, to tell a story to the other person, is in some real kind of way to attack the child. If my father is bad, I'm partly bad because I identify in part with him. If my mom is bad, then I'm partly bad. That definitely means that I've got to do work with a therapist and it has nothing to do with co-parenting. The biggest risk really in families that are not intact, families that are divorced or co-parenting splits is the polarization. Think of a teeter-totter with each person taking a step farther away from the middle to find balance. And if I'm doing all the boundaries and you're doing all the nurturing, I don't get to do nurturing because I'm afraid if I do any, if I let my foot off the brake, it's going to be ultimate chaos. And you have the same experience that if you stop nurturing and focus on setting a boundary, then there'll be no nurturing at all. So taking risks, finding a step towards the center, healing our own wounds from our own childhood, right? Many of us are trying to compensate for what we didn't get as children. We don't want to be our parents. We don't want to do the same thing, injure our children in the same ways, hurt them the same ways. All of these dynamics cause us to make less wise decisions, decisions that aren't based on the needs of the child. Focus on the goals. Like, that's the common shared stuff. And realize that focusing on goals and how we get there is two different things. Like I was saying earlier, when people have very different styles, it can often be shown that they have similar needs, similar wants, excuse me, similar goals. And then we make a shift to something, I think, more fundamental to this idea of locus of control, what you can and can't control. You know, again, it's a powerless place. It's a disadvantage. I'll agree with that all day long, but it is what it is. And if I focus on trying to change you, fix you, convince you, be right, tell you the truth, get you to accept it, right? I lose a lot of my energy, resources to parent my children. You can only do what you can do. And it's no more healthy to focus on trying to change a co-parent who's gone crazy than it is to try to change anybody who's gone crazy. That's not what we do. We try to fix us, and we try to show up authentic and courageous, honest and kind, compassionate and curious. And we try to let go of how people respond to that. similar to the idea that you might not be the best one to talk to, you might not be the best one to vent to. That's tempting because it often feels validating. I want to speak a minute about step-parenting. You know, step-parents offer a specific advantage and I think a specific liability. First of all, we talk about the idea that they ideally, sometimes there's no choice because they are the stay-at-home parent. They're the one that does the bulk of the parenting with children. And in those cases, it's a challenge. But that's more important that the biological or primary parent in that household absolutely supports, endorses when they can the discipline coming from the step-parent. We encourage, we like it when the parent instead of the step-parent is the enforcer. It's so easy for a child to marginalize the step-parent. And even in sometimes nearly ideal situations, there's a different kind of bond and affection between a parent and a child and a step-parent and the child. And that's affected by when they came into the life of that child. Sometimes the step-parent can be more effective at communicating with the non-custodial parent, right? Your ex-spouse, your ex-partner. The strength that they have is that they can see more clearly and objectively what's happening. That's true. Sometimes that can offer some clarity, and the emotions, the fusion, the enmeshment, the over-identification is removed. So they can offer perspective. The difficulty is that sometimes it can be extra cold and unempathic. Because it's easier to see things more objectively, one can become impatient with the parent saying, look at how crazy you're being. Look at how you're enabling him. Look at how she has you wrapped around her finger. And as we all know and can guess, that doesn't help much. So using the step-parents as a resource in parenting challenges, but also encouraging the step-parent to be empathic and understand that it can be a different situation. There are different challenges if it's your child that you raised from birth or adopted early on. The parent is to stay involved. Be the bad cop as much as possible. And make do with your circumstances. Again, you only can do what you can do. And co-parenting therapy can help with that. Single parents. One of the biggest mistakes with single parents, some of it's pretty task-oriented and pragmatic, but over-relying on the child to kind of show up as an adult, show up as a partner, show up as somebody to lean on. We try to make those kinds of roles, circumstances, as explicit as possible. So we acknowledge it. Parentifying a child means pulling them up into the executive system, giving them equal say, equal vote, relying on them. I talk about this idea of the parent filter, right? You run things through your parent or adult filter, which means you listen to your child, you understand them, you have empathy for them, but you don't take things at face value, right? You run it through a filter that's based on your adult self, and you make decisions based on that. Again, one of those principles that I can't really overstate is taking care of yourself. It's critical. If you don't, your child will be tempted to fill in the vacuum and most often will. And you'll ask them to. You'll need them to feel a certain way about things, to feel a certain way about you. So take care of yourself. It's too heavy of a burden to carry your self-esteem. And in single parenting, that's going to be a particular vulnerability, because the absence of a co-parent. Doing things, developing relationships outside of the parent-child relationship can be helpful. And sometimes it's going to feel like you're letting them down and you're neglecting them. And of course it can get out of balance. But they need to know. They need to know that you're unavailable, that you fail at times, them, to take care of yourself, to know that you're safe. Make any blurring of the parental boundaries overt, temporary, and content limited. Because there are fewer resources in the family, extra chores, extra responsibilities, tasks, talk about them as much as possible. And then find other sources of support, not just friendships, but groups, support groups, therapists, friends, family, and mentors, other people that you can rely on and lean on, because your child ought not to be the one that you're getting that resource from. They're the one that's compromised. They're the one that's struggling. So focus on your side of the street. There's a saying in the book Addictive Thinking by Abraham Tversky. He's talking about parents who have an addict child. And he says it's kind of like his experience when they come to him with advice. They're saying something akin to the idea of, tell me what 1 + 1 is, but don't say 2. And sometimes I feel that way with co-parenting questions. Tell me what to do, but don't tell me to accept it, to let go, to focus on me, to stop trying to change them. All of those things are things that we learn in our work with co-parenting and codependency and Al-Anon and CODA and Families Anonymous, child development, child psychology, family systems theory. All of those things are challenging but important steps to take. Be the safe one. Be the stable one. Be the one that doesn't ask the child to take care of your esteem. Take care of yourself and go to therapy. Even if you're the only one going to therapy, if your co-parenting therapist won't go, co-parenting partner won't come to therapy, you go. Again, it's one of those things people ask me all the time. What if I can't get my partner to go? What if I can't get my adult son or daughter to go? I think desperately they need help, support. The answer is the same. You go. It'll make a difference. I haven't been to couples therapy with my wife and maybe once in the last 10 years. And you better believe that my individual therapy makes a difference with her. In the last 20 years, I've been to family therapy a couple of dozen times with various children. But you better believe in the last 20 years, my individual therapy has made a difference in my parenting. Because it's about my project. It's about me anyway. I love these ideas from Al-Anon. What you think about me is none of my business, they say. What you think about them is none of their business. And what your child thinks about them is none of your business. Like, get clear about your side of the street. Get clear about your circle. Get clear about what's outside of your control. And focus on what's inside of your control, which, by the way, is a tall enough task for all of us for the rest of our lives. And I want to say this. You can't control it. You can't fix it. But your best chance is at self-reflection. Your best chance is going to do your own work. If you have a co-parent who's undermining, sabotaging, not balancing, not supporting you, go to Al-Anon. Go to Codependence Anonymous. Learn from those folks what to do when a loved one is suffering, when somebody in your life is sabotaging and in pain and mentally ill or addicted and you can't change it. How do you live with that? How do you cope with that? And it's the best chance that you have. All right. I'm going to go to upcoming events and then I'll take questions. For the intensives coming up, Finding You, February 20th through 24th. If you want to take a deep dive, come to an intensive. Finding You in Park City, Utah. Our next workshop will be February 16th in our Oregon program. 16th and 17th, we ask all parents to come if possible. Experiential, multifamily, if it coincides timing-wise clinically with a visit to your child, that can be a great time. Contact Melanie at evoketherapy.com for more information about our upcoming workshops for parents. And if you want to do a deep dive as an individual to look at your work and what is your project, contact intensives at evoketherapy.com. We want all parents to go to 6 12-step support groups, any combination of Al-Anon, CODA, Families Anonymous, Nar-Anon, or Alateen. Our next support group's coming up. We have one in New York City on February 11th, one in Southern California on February 24th. For details, time, location, contact Melanie at evoketherapy.com. All of these broadcasts are available on the podcast app, on iPhone or iOS devices, on your podcast app by searching Evoke Therapy Programs. If you have an Android device, you can find these by downloading the SoundCloud app and searching Evoke Therapy Programs. On any computer, you can go to soundcloud.com and find us by searching Evoke Therapy Programs. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram with the handle at Evoke Therapy. Search us on Facebook using Evoke Therapy Programs. Or if you want to find out more about the alumni organization that helps people that can't afford therapy, go to Facebook and search Evoke Family Foundation. Our therapy blog is available to you with updated content each week. My book, The Journey of the Heroic Parent, is available on Amazon. And are there any questions that have come in? Alex tells me when no questions come in, it's because I've been especially thorough. Sometimes it's technical difficulties. So thank you for focusing on you. Thank you for, and on behalf of your children, for being willing to look at yourself. If you attended this because, or listening to this because, you have a co-parent that's undermining, I empathize with you. It is a challenge. It is being in a fight with one hand tied behind your back. And what you do can make a difference, even if they don't change. Make a difference for you, your child, your child's development, your relationship with your child. The next book, I don't really know how to say this orally, but the next book that I'm going to do a review on will be Monday, January 28th, this Monday, at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. It is called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F-U-C-K. That's the name of the title. I've had it recommended by many people. It's by Mark Monson. So I'm looking forward to reading and sharing that wisdom with you. Thanks for joining us this evening, folks. I hope this is a helpful point of contact. Take care, and I'll talk to you Monday night. Bye-bye.